They call us the irregulars, but baby, we're always on time. Baker Street babes always leave the rest of them behind. Oh. So when Scotland Yard, they send you home, you feel like you're losing your quotidian world has got you crying. Won't you two to one mine?
This is your, this is totally your episode cover, so I'm making you do the intros and shit.
Oh shit. Alright then. And welcome to the Baker Street Babe podcast. This episode is going to be about Sidney Paget, who is the iconic illustrator for all of the Victorian era work of Sherlock Holmes. And today we have Curly.
Oh hi, sorry.
Who is possibly still asleep.
I'm fairly certain I am, yes.
Well, that's because of the stupid time difference. We had to get up ridiculously early this morning.
Yes, there is a, what is it, 12 hours? So it's, yeah, it's 9:30 in the evening for me, and 9:30 in the morning for these guys.
Which isn't early to some of you people, but for us, who work night shifts.
Dedication to cause.
Yes.
It's early. It's early.
That's fine, I get locked in my dorm at 11 o'clock anyway, so it's not like I can go anywhere.
They lock you in.
It's like, seriously, they do, yeah.
Oh my god, China. Cannot get out.
They just don't want you going out holding protests or anything.
Oh no, it's so we don't like sneak into the boys' dorm, I think.
Because, oh, you know, if you really want to get into the boys' dorm, you'll find a way of getting into the boys' dorm.
They'd freak out, like, no, I actually kind of, we kind of live in the boys' dorm. There's like a, this kind of green glass wall separating the foreigners from like the normal Chinese people. It is like quite creepy. There is to be no fraternizing of the foreigners and the Chinese.
And after this podcast, China will no longer allow Kaffirs to do a podcast with us.
I'm sorry, China, I like you really.
We have Chinese listeners. It's true.
Ni hao. Please tell me that, like, you like the podcast, and I love China, really. I really love it here, but there's some, like, stuff that's, like, a bit culturally different.
Yeah. For sure, for sure.
Okay, let's actually talk about the point of this podcast. Incidentally, there are quite a lot of Sherlock Holmes fans in China.
Yeah, there's a society, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's quite popular, especially because of the BBC TV series and the film as well, obviously. People here have seen it, so they've like heard of it. Because of a manga as well, called...
Oh, Detective Conan.
Yeah, that's what, someone can probably correct me on that, so people kind of know about it anyway. Which is quite cool. But yeah, back to good old Sydney. My mate Sydney. So the point of this podcast is to talk about him as an artist, whether we think he had a significant influence on people's idea of what Sherlock Holmes looked like from his illustrations in The Strand. Well, Sidney Paget wasn't the original person who was intended to illustrate Sherlock Holmes. It was actually his brother. Mm-hmm. His name I can't remember. I'm really professional like that.
Isn't it like George?
Probably, you know, it's a Victorian name. The point is that he wasn't supposed to be the artist. You can imagine that the art probably would have been quite different if it had been his brother, and apparently he was more technically better at art than his brother was. He's lived in China for so long, I've forgotten how to speak English. Yeah. So yeah, and apparently as well, there's a common belief that that Sherlock Holmes' face is actually based on his brother, but we don't know how true that actually is.
Well, looking at a picture of Paget, whatever his face, there is quite a similarity with him, and I imagine he doesn't look that much different from his brother, but...
A lot of people say that when people, you know, people draw characters from their imagination, they do tend to have, like, a resemblance to themselves. So whether that's, you know, intrinsic artistic narcissism showing through, or a complete load of bollocks, we don't know.
So I've done a little research of my own. Wikipedia. And he had two brothers, Henry Marriott and Walter Stanley.
Walter's the one who's supposed to be hired.
Okay, so.
Yeah. Poor Walter.
I didn't want us all thinking there was some George Padgett walking around on the face of the earth that doesn't exist. He doesn't, so it was Walter.
There is no George Padgett, let it go.
It is an urban myth.
Created by us.
For like 5 minutes.
Yeah, so Walter was meant to be the original artist, and there's some quite interesting information about his illustration. I'm not sure if he illustrated every single story, but it's possible that he did. And obviously, like, one of his most iconic ones is the one for the Hound of the Baskervilles, which has got a big kind of glowing dog on it. And like Holmes and Watson, like, hid behind a rock, just kind of like nonchalantly watching this huge dog, which is light running across the moor.
Oh, look, a puppy.
Which, you know, kind of gives the wrong impression about what the Hound of the Baskervilles is actually about. Which I guess so many kind of like weird horror films, like where it's, you know, a supernatural dog. And of course, the iconic image of Reichenbach Falls, where Holmes is giving Moriarty a big old bear hug.
That's what it looks like. It's like it's okay, man. It's okay. And I think there's this image going around that saying like, it's okay, man. Let's hug it out.
And then they went for a swim.
They went for a swim.
Whee!
Turns out Moriarty can't swim.
Oh my god!
It's like one of those like bedtime stories. Like it's all happy. It's like, and then they went for a swim, and they're swimming around, but Moriarty never came back up.
Oh god, if you go on YouTube, right, this is completely random and unrelated, but if you search for like old 70s safety adverts, like from England, there's this one called like The Darkness Water, and it's the creepiest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Oh god.
It's just this guy in like a hooded cloak following children around, like trying to like push them in the water so they'll drown.
Oh my god.
Just absolutely mental. Like to warn children about playing near water.
Oh, jeez.
I'm never going near water in England again.
Yeah, no, you never know what might, like, try and drag you in. back to Sherlock Holmes. Of course, the one image that is really iconic is the one of Holmes and Watson sitting in, and Holmes is sat forward with one of his hands out and the other hand kind of pointing to the middle of it. He's got a lovely old deerstalker on, which is never ever mentioned in the books, as far as I'm aware.
They say like a cloth cap, but I think that's the extent of it.
Yeah, they say that he's credited with giving the first deerstalker cap and cape to Holmes.
Look at what you did, Sydney. Look at what you did.
Look at your choices.
They're always drawn with horns on their helmets. That's not actually true. Sorry to shatter all your preconceptions.
Vikings have no horns.
But they are horny.
Thank you for that.
Sorry, I'm like completely lacking in sexual innuendo at the moment because like most people don't speak enough English here to like understand. That's what she said. I'm sorry to have to subject you all to this.
What I like about the image of him expanding, like pointing to his hand, that it keeps being recreated. And I think one of my favorite images is for the BBC Sherlock, they were doing it in the diner. And you can just tell, like, this is just for a picture's sake, paying homage to this Paget illustration. And it just shows, like, Moffat and Gage are such fanboys, and it's so fantastic.
It is, it's brilliant. I remember there's a website somewhere that's got a whole, like a whole page of them, like, recreated in different films and things, because obviously it's so iconic. Mm-hmm. That they often try and recreate it. There's one from that film, which is not based on any particular book. Oh, what's it called? But yeah, anyway, there's a whole bunch of them, because it is the kind of the image that a lot of people, I think probably the image, that springs to most people's eyes when you mention Sherlock Holmes is the old English train carriage, With them wearing these, you know, Watson's got his little bowler hat on and suit, and Sherlock's got his rather fashionable cape and deerstalker hat on. What's quite nice, actually, is I see a lot of people who draw, you know, fan art of Sherlock Holmes' train carriage, and I really hate to tell them that they don't exist anymore. I really don't want to say anything because I don't want to spoil this idea that, like, we still have these beautiful old train carriages, but we really don't in England anymore. Get a private carriage, I'm afraid, on trains.
That's unfortunate, because I would totally ride in those all the time.
The other interesting fact I found out as well from the internet is that there are a couple of drawings that were never included in any particular story, and one of which was actually rescued from his bin. Apparently, Sidney Paget drew a portrait of Holmes and then tore it in half and threw it away. It was either his wife or one of his children fished it out and actually rescued it. So who knows why he actually threw that away.
That's what you did back then when you didn't like something you drew. God. you know, you ripped it up and you threw it out. Unlike today when you hit escape or undo.
Yeah, true. That's probably true, actually. And then someone else is like, this is pretty good. And the artist is like, why? Why did you publish that drawing?
There was no undo button in Victorian England.
Charcoal's a real bitch when it goes wrong. Now, I had did a bit of research into the printing process as well, because one of the really important points to remember about this is because they were published in the Strand. And obviously back then, magazines had to be quite simple so that they could print as many as possible with, you know, little cost to themselves. And obviously the actual drawings would have been translated onto etchings or wood engravings. I think that they were used mostly steel to do that, which made it a lot faster. Because they used to use copper, but copper, if you use it too many times, actually loses the etching and kind of wears it off, and you have to keep carving it in again. But obviously steel can last for a really long time. And it was kind of the beginning of mass production, which meant obviously that the Sherlock Holmes stories were distributed to like quite a large number of people, which meant not only the stories, but the images became part of popular culture very, very quickly. And it's why there was quite a high demand for Arthur Conan Doyle to write more, which is why he kind of weirdly ended up hating Sherlock Holmes.
Oh my God, he hates Sherlock Holmes so much.
Yeah, weird. We all love him, and like his creator kind of like really hated him. But yeah, no, it's an interesting period of time as well, because it tells you a lot about how society is changing, in which you can have this like massive distribution of something. So it's, you can probably imagine people like, you know, with their copies of The Strand, you know, leaping through to the, you know, the story of Sherlock Holmes, that they've been looking forward to reading the next one, and they talk about it with their friends and they have a look at the pictures and things. So it's like, you know, it's like, it was kind of like basically the first Vine that ever existed, like magazine. Like it was, you know, there were loads of fans who used to read it. I just quite like that little kind of the image of it being this kind of thing that people got and were like, oh my God, the new Sherlock Holmes book is out. Oh. Have you read it yet? Oh my God.
There's this dog and it was glowing.
Oh, they loved that kind of stuff in Victorian times. Like, really, they just like ate it up. And what's really brilliant about the drawings as well is with photographs and things, obviously you couldn't reproduce those in magazines. So we get this kind of almost kind of idealized look into what the Victorians, like kind of what the artist wanted you to see, as opposed to what was like really there, which I think is quite fascinating. Because you can see there's like a lot of other drawings that Paget did that like have nothing to do with Sherlock Holmes. And he really loved drawing horses, actually. There's like quite a lot of drawings where he's done some really fantastic, accurate drawings of horses. There were loads of horses around in Victorian times.
Yes.
That, or that was how he learned how to draw. Because I know that a lot... when I tried to learn drawing when I was growing up, I always took out the horse drawing book because it has so many intricate musculature and the way a horse moves and everything. There's always something different. So maybe that's how he learned how to draw. So he enjoyed drawing horses because that was the first thing he learned how to draw. That's going to be my headcanon now.
That, like, by the way, like, we have no idea if that's true or not. But
yeah, no, we really don't. I'm just totally making that up right now.
No idea what the factual basis of that is. Actually, I have heard from people who can draw horses have said that to be able to draw a horse, you have to spend a lot of time with horses. And I can't draw a horse because I don't like horses. So I can avoid spending time with them, I do. But people who are very good at drawing them, so obviously, like, you know, it's perfectly, there were horses everywhere in Victorian times. You would have seen them, like, all the time. And there's obviously the drawing of the insides of Baker Street, which is quite influential as well as to what it looked like. Because obviously if you go to the Sherlock Holmes Museum, they've tried to recreate, like, what his rooms were like. And I imagine quite a lot of that is based on the Sidney Paget drawing of, like, there's, like, one of Holmes, like, sitting in a rocking chair.
That image is just adorable.
There's not a lot of consistency in the chairs, I've noticed, in his drawing.
I'm wondering if that has something to do with, like, where Paget lived or where he was drawing at the time. Like, that piece of furniture that happened to be in front of him became part of the illustration.
No, I think there probably is something to that, actually, because he will have, you know, he might have used perhaps not a facial model, but he probably would have had somebody in the particular pose that he wanted. Like, he would have paid someone to do that, because that's often what people did. Like, even if they didn't use the face, they would often have people pose. Although, actually, in those days, it was much easier to get photographs. So it's entirely possible that a lot of his drawings are based on photographs of completely different houses. It just happened to be the particular pose that he wanted. I know that Alphonse Mucha used to do that, if you've ever seen any of his stuff.
I love Mucha!
But his book of photographs is really great if you ever get a chance to, like, see it, because he used to get women to model for him, and he'd take a photograph, and that's all he'd ever use. He wouldn't have a live model, he would just have a photograph. But he used to write the most hilarious things, like, underneath the pictures. He would write, like, this woman is very fat. And just, like, really, like, really unflattering descriptions of them.
Why?
So I imagine, like, because the furniture, like, is so inconsistent, like, in these drawings, like, the chairs are just totally different. It might be that he was using photographs or, as you say, like, furniture for his own house, because he had a wife, children. I don't imagine he was living in, a one-room apartment like Holmes and Watson themselves, so it's possible that he had several rooms worth of furniture to draw his illustrations from. There's, like, a fantastic umbrella stand in one of them.
Umbrellas are very important in Sherlock Holmes.
So you never know when you might need to, like, you know, whip an umbrella out.
Ella, Ella, Oh, I just pulled this up, but it said that Paget did 356 published drawings for the Sherlock Holmes series. That's a lot of pictures.
And what's really fascinating as well is if you look at the pictures, like, Sherlock Holmes gets older as they go on. I think it's really fascinating. This is like me being weird and nerdy, but because obviously, like, the character gets older in the stories, he has actually pictured him as, like, being older. Because there's a lovely illustration with Sherlock sitting in a wicker chair, and he looks really, really young. And so does Watson. But then there's, like, the older illustrations just of his face, and, like, Holmes looks really old and quite severe, with, you know, visible kind of wrinkles on his face. So that's, like, quite interesting that he, you know, the character changed over time, like, his appearance. Maybe even due to, like, changes in Paget's own life, you know, the drawings, like, when Sherlock is older, like, are definitely more kind of somber. You know, he's kind of, like, looking out at the viewer with these kind of, like, really, like, harsh eyes. You can tell quite a lot about, like, artists, like, by the way that their art changes over time. Kandinsky is a really good example of that. If you look at Kandinsky's work, he starts off very light and colourful, and then when things get really bad in his life, like, everything is suddenly very dark.
I believe I read this somewhere. I believe this is true. That Arthur Conan Doyle said that Paget made Sherlock Holmes too attractive when he drew him, that he made him, yeah, more handsome than he had intended or had envisioned in his own head, which I find interesting. Like, I would love to know what was in Arthur Conan Doyle's head, as would all of us.
Yeah.
But
as with most people who read Sherlock Holmes, what were you thinking, man?
Yeah. Like, the picture's like, he's not unattractive, but he's not, like, sort of that typical, like, handsome Victorian gentleman. Like, he's still a little weird-looking, and, I mean, he's described, like, as hawkish and severe and everything, so, you know, that makes sense. But you would think maybe in the Victorian era that they really would idealize, like, everything extensively.
I think Arthur Conan Doyle was a bit of an oddball anyway.
Yes.
And also he was Scottish.
What are you trying to say?
Nothing. I wasn't implying anything. Turk's not here because...
Oh man, I wish Turk was here.
What are you trying to say? But, I can see what he means though, because in like the really early illustrations, like Holmes is like, he's not... like beautiful, but he's not ugly either. He's got quite an attractive face, but, you know, a little bit severe with kind of like harsh cheekbones. Yeah,
it's all about the cheekbones.
I imagine that's probably why they chose certain actors.
Well, it's funny you should bring up the acting, because I mean, let's be honest, a lot of the TV shows and the movies and everything that's based on Sherlock Holmes, I think a lot of their ideas of how it's going to be set, the actors that are cast, the look of it, comes from these illustrations, and not exactly from what Conan Doyle describes them.
Which actually kind of says a lot about how powerful these illustrations are. Actually, that like the stories have more elements in them, you know, Paget's illustrations than the actual descriptions in the book.
Right.
And there's this fantastic photograph, if you go on the Wikipedia page, of Paget himself wearing a deerstalker. So obviously that's a look he kind of liked to rock.
No one should ever rock that look.
Hey, you said I look good when I put that deerstalker on at the museum.
I mean...
You were just trying to get me to buy the hat. I get it.
No, it's all cool. I'm going to, you know, if I could make the deerstalker into a fashion thing here in China, I'm sure it would take off.
That's your mission now. Make the deerstalker into a fashion
thing. It literally is going to be my mission now. Like, we're all going to be wearing them. Everybody here wears, like, glass, like, glasses without any glass in them, and they're just absolutely hilarious.
God.
It's like the the people of the hipsters have come. They have come. Yeah, but late at night for me now, I'm kind of like gone a bit mental. but yeah, no, I think there's definitely a lot to be said about the illustrations and how they've affected the not even just people who are fans of Sherlock Holmes, even people who just have kind of heard of it. Probably imagine a man with a deerstalker, you know, and a massive magnifying glass. Like, God knows where that came from. as the image of Sherlock Holmes. And I'm sure that there are entire, you know, films that are based on him that are people who've only ever seen the illustrations and never actually read the books.
Sure. Yeah, because the curved pipe came from, I think, William Gillette's portrayal. Like, that's not even in Paget's drawings, because he just has, like, a straight one in the illustrations. The power of the artist.
Don't never deny the power of the artist. But yeah, no, I think there is a lot to be said about how, like, he created these images. It's, like, one of those things I wish we could, like, find out more about him as a person and, like, what kind of stuff happened in his life, because I'm sure it will have influenced, like, what he did in his art and how he portrayed Sherlock Holmes the way that he did.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot on him. I wonder if there are books on him. Maybe, probably.
I'm not getting hold of them in China.
I know, you can go and you can look at all of the illustrations at Project Gutenberg. They're all up there.
I would particularly recommend The Hound of the Baskerville for the glowing dog.
No, I love it in Baker Street Tube Station that the walls of the Bakerloo line, especially that platform, have just like page of drawings all along. And I just love it every time I pass through that station. It's like, oh, and I try and guess the story as I go past.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah, no, I remember that, actually, like, that summer we spent together, darling. But yeah, no, it's so iconic that, like, it just inhabits, like, Baker Street Station. And do you know what? You know, the 221B Baker Street gets absolutely loads of fan mail all year round. Like, people still write letters to Sherlock Holmes as if he was, like, a real person. And it's interesting, actually, that people kind of, I guess one of the reasons why people were so fond of him as well is because of the illustrations, like, because obviously back then they didn't put photographs in things like the Strand. People were drawn by illustrators and they would have printed those instead. If you read Raffles, my casual insert of this episode, he often, like, people often talk about, oh, I've seen, like, because he's a famous, like, England cricket player, as well as, like, a master thief. when people see him, they're like, oh, yes, I've seen your likeness in the paper. And what they actually mean is, like, they've seen his drawing, because that's what they used to do. So, in a way, it would have been very easy for people to imagine Sherlock Holmes, like, as a real person, because they've, you know, they've seen his picture. It's funny how, like, there are people who genuinely believe that Sherlock Holmes was, like, a real man who lived in the Victorian times and, like, you know, solved crime. Probably has to do with not just the power of the stories, but the power of the illustrations and how, like, iconic they are.
There was a poll fairly recently that it made its way around the internet that a lot of people still believe that he was a real person.
I did when I was a child. I thought he was real. I'm, like, willing to admit that now.
It's okay. You're among friends.
Thank you. But to be fair, like, it's so ingrained in the culture that it's really easy, like, to think that people do actually believe that he's real.
And there's tons of people out there right now going, what do you mean he's not real? What are you talking about?
Sorry.
This is all an illusion.
I wanted to make a point of mentioning Watson especially because Arthur Conan Doyle actually never really describes him beyond that. When he came back, he was, like, really thin and tan. But otherwise, he never says, like, Watson is blonde, even though he always seems to be blonde. Does he even mention the mustache? Like, he's always...
They mention the mustache in Charles Augustus Milverton.
Do they? Okay.
It's because that's what Lestrade says to Sherlock at the end of it. He's like, oh, they caught, like, he might even describe him as having pale hair, you know. Or they just say they caught a man with a mustache. And, like, you can literally imagine, like, and then Sherlock is kind of like, oh, you could be describing Watson when you say that. And, like, he's obviously, like, kicking him under the table, like, shut up, Holmes. Shut up. But that's, like, a particularly funny part, but he does describe him as having a mustache. Okay. So, yeah, I think he's very casual in his descriptions of the characters. You're kind of left to imagine them really, like, yourself, or he just particularly wasn't that interested in describing them.
I wonder if that was by choice, though, to give the reader their chance to implant who they thought, you know, would make, you know, what they thought Watson and Holmes would look like.
Yeah. And I mean, also, loads of people are going to hate me for saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway. John Watson is a bit of a Mary Sue character. He's like a little bit of an author insert. He's obviously there as, you know, he's a doctor. Arthur Conan Doyle was a doctor. And he's got a Scottish middle name. Arthur Conan Doyle was Scottish. And he kind of, you know, bumbles around after Holmes and is kind of that kind of Victorian writing device where he kind of writes about Sherlock, you know, within the story. So it's like the writing within the writing. So he's a character that is often inconsistent. And even in the drawings as well, actually, like, Holmes has kind of a more defined look than Watson does. He sort of seems to morph as the drawings go on, but he is always depicted with that mustache. And it's funny that in, like, a lot of films that they always kind of make Watson into a bit of a comic relief character. You know, sometimes he's, like, he's quite pudgy or he's, like, short and the mustache is just, like, frankly hilarious.
Big bushy mustache.
Big bushy mustache. He's kind of like, what ho, Holmes, blah, blah, blah. But actually, like, in some of these drawings, like, he seems to be kind of, I don't know, I think Padé is more kind of complimentary of Watson, although there are a couple where he does have a really hilariously large mustache.
Yeah, it seems to fluctuate.
Yeah, it's either, like, really ridiculously small or, like, really, like, walrus-like. I don't know what he was thinking.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, Holmes is always, he always looks fairly similar. And, like, all sort of illustrations are, like, you know, like the comic books that have been made and stuff. But Watson's appearance changes all the time. I saw a picture from this comic book recently that, I mean, he was brunette and he had these amazing spectacles. He also had the mustache. But he, I was like, I like a bespeckled Watson. That's amazing.
That's amazing.
It's kind of like, as long as he has a mustache, it's Watson.
Everything goes. Anything goes.
Anything goes.
I'm looking at, speaking of Watson, I'm looking at two photos. I'm looking at a Paget drawing and of Watson and Holmes. And on another tab, I'm looking at a photo of Arthur Conan Doyle. And there are some similarities there between
very
how Paget drew Watson at the between Watson and Conan Doyle. So I don't know.
I mean, it makes sense because ACD, like, he based Sherlock Holmes off of what's his face, Bell, and so it's like, oh, maybe they look kind of similar, yada yada yada. But yeah, it is sort of that. What is that? What's the word? What's the word I want?
Self-insert. I don't know.
Yeah, it's reflecting that.
And yeah,
he writes it as a first-person narrative, so it only makes sense.
Yeah,
there's a little bit of similarity there. Yeah, maybe that's why Arthur Conan Doyle hated him so much, because he was like, Watson should be the main character. What were you even thinking? Arthur Conan Doyle, no one knows. Yeah, no, there is, that's the really funny thing as well, because obviously especially the Sherlock Holmes silhouette is really, really iconic, but there isn't, like, there's no fixed kind of Watson image.
Yeah,
like,
there isn't.
You always see pictures of Sherlock Holmes, but you never really see, like, really iconic pictures of John Watson. He kind of is able to fluctuate in different versions of Sherlock Holmes. You have a lot more freedom, I think, with how to portray him, which is why there's quite a lot of those kind of comedy Watsons.
Because sure.
I guess they want to make, like, Sherlock Holmes look even smarter by making his companion, like, really ridiculously stupid. Kind of think it works a bit better if he's a bit, like, smarter.
No, for sure. Yeah, because, like, I mean, take our icon, for example. It's a Sherlock Holmes silhouette. Like, it's been edited, of course. But if you saw that, it's like, oh yeah, Sherlock Holmes. If you saw just a silhouette of a guy with a mustache, it's like, a guy with a mustache.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to identify it as Watson.
Yeah, it's all about Sherlock, basically. Like Holmes is the iconic image of the stories, and Watson's just kind of there to tell the stories. Like, that's his purpose. So his image is a bit more kind of fuzzy, because really we're, as a viewer, we're, as a reader, we're looking through his eyes at how he sees Holmes. So I think I don't know how it kind of seems to translate so well into the drawings, but, like, Sherlock is always the focus of the drawings and Watson's kind of just in the background, and he's always looking at Holmes as well. Like, if you look at all the drawings, he's always looking at him, and Holmes isn't often looking back at him. No, literally, I'm just scrolling through all these drawings, and in all of them, like, almost all of them, like, Holmes is not looking at Watson, and Watson is just staring at him.
That sounds about right.
Really, it's really interesting, like, yeah, where he's, like, he's talking to other people, or he's smoking his pipe, but, like, Watson's just sat there or stood there, and he's just looking at home. And that, like, that really tells you, like, a lot about the stories. He is us, he is the people. We are just watching Holmes and his brilliance, and that's probably a lot to do with why he's a bit of a fuzzy old character.
I'd also like to point out how big Sherlock Holmes's feet are in these pictures. It's massive feet.
Just you.
I'm just saying, did Paget have massive feet? Maybe he imposed his giant feet onto Sherlock Holmes.
He imposed his giant feet.
I'm looking at the Reichenbach picture again, mostly because it makes me giggle.
The bear hug. The epic bear hug.
Epic.
Let's just be friends!
I love you, man! But it's saying that the original drawing was sold at Sotheby's in New York in 2004 for $800,000. Yeah, that's a lot of money for a picture. So it shows, like, they're still very prized, and they're still, you know, highly collectible. And, like you said, they are exceptionally iconic. Like, these are the pictures of Sherlock Holmes. Like, there's nothing else. These are the originals. This is what you should imagine.
Yeah, no, and I think it's true. I mean, obviously, like, you can get copies of The Strand, but the original drawings might sell for a phenomenal amount of money. And also, like, the etchings will be a little bit different because they would have been copied by somebody else, like, from the original drawing.
I would like to get an issue of The Strand, like, one of the old ones. That'd be a cool thing to have. Lindsay has one. Damn her.
Damn her. Damn her and her Sherlock Holmes Strand. I doubt you could get the A Study in Scarlet for love nor money.
Oh, God.
But you could probably get one of the smaller stories. I would absolutely love, predictably, to have Charles Augustus Milverton. But, you know, it's not going to happen. But, so, you know, if anyone wants to know, my birthday was, like, last week, so...
Christmas is coming up. You can buy that for us, people. You know, we'll accept it. We'll accept it. You know, fine.
Especially cake. And Sherlock Holmes cake would also be cool.
You two have no shame.
We absolutely don't. Very true.
Nope. I would like a copy of The Strand that had the Red-Headed League in it. So if anyone wants to buy that for me, I'd be much obliged.
Right. I'm going to have to go, you guys, before, like, we start pimping ourselves out for, like, copies of The Strand. I have to get up very early tomorrow and I haven't packed.
Well, before you go, I think we should do just a quick update. Paul McGuin, that's how you pronounce his last name, correct? I'm doing that correctly? Okay, yes. He tweeted while we were talking. It's a Sherlock update. All episodes are locked. Yeah, they're completing the music score, sound mix, and grading, and they should be done by the end of the month.
Fantastic. Yay! I'm so excited!
So, yeah, hooray! That's exciting.
Yep, we have lots of Sherlock Holmes to look forward to in the future. So we've got the new series of the BBC, we've got the new film, which I believe is coming out at Christmas, am I right in saying that?
Yeah. It's somewhere around there.
They usually have it out at Christmas because it's like a big viewing, isn't it? So,
yeah.
Yeah, lots of Sherlock Holmes this year, people. I hope you're all excited.
Exciting. Oh, and the Great Sherlock Holmes debate is November 10th. Audience tickets have already gone out, so if you don't have one, sorry.
You'll have to view it afterwards.
Yeah, it'll be recorded and everything, so it'll be up afterwards. But that's happening. And then I just want to say, because it's a big number and it's still sort of weird, that this is just our Podomatic page. This isn't iTunes or anything, but we have 22,000 hits.
Oh my God.
On our Podomatic page. And over 17,000 of those are listens and downloads and embeds and yeah.
I don't understand. That number doesn't make any sense. I can't imagine that number of people.
So
I can't even imagine that number of otters.
I know.
And if anyone can get that reference, I love you.
Oh, you guys. I can't be mad at you.
So to all 17,000 of you, if you've listened or re-listened or whatever, thank you.
I love you. Well, I, Neiman.
See, you're saying I love you in Chinese.
I didn't say I love you, I said I love you all.
I'm sorry, I don't speak, I'm American, I don't speak your language.
It's okay. What a Zhongwen Pao. My Chinese is not very good.
So that's all happening, and being cool, and stuff. I feel like there's something else I wanted to say.
I can also look up how to write Sherlock Holmes in Chinese characters. If anyone's interested in seeing that, we can put it like on our Tumblr page.
Yeah, totally, totally.
I hope his name means better stuff than mine does.
Yeah, this is something we discussed before we started recording.
Jen's Chinese name is very amusing.
It makes me depressed.
So yeah, guys, if you're bored and you've got nothing else to do, the internet is your friend. You can look up your name in Chinese. Find out what it means.
Oh, we have a Facebook page now. That was the other thing.
Oh yeah, there was something else before I'd like derailed the conversation.
We are on Facebook now. I believe it's just facebook.com/bakerstreetbabes. So you should go there and hit that like button and talk to us and stuff.
Yep.
It just started, so there's not a whole lot of people on it yet. So don't like freak out and think
like little messages of love and tell us what you like about Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, we'll do like polls and like talk to people on it because people seem to like and talk on Facebook. So there you go.
Well, Facebook before, I think, apart from the fact it's blocked in China.
Yeah.
Bad time.
Damn you, China!
You won't be hearing from me on Facebook for at least another month or so until I'm back in England.
Okay. I know, any final remarks? Gaffers has to go to sleep now.
Yep, because I gotta get up early tomorrow.
Alright, cool. So, what's the moral for today's episode?
The moral for today's episode is, if you're going to draw somebody, have a consistent model. Da-dum-dum.
Hi, this is a little message from Artie. First of all, I'd like to say thank you very, very much to everyone who came to the Sherlock meetup at the London Expo a couple of weeks ago that I hosted. It was a pleasure to meet you all, and I hope you'll be listening to the podcast, and I hope you hear this message. Thank you so much for everyone who took flyers and promoted us. I'd like to do a little shout out to Abaddon Books because they had a nice stall and I talked to one of their writers, Jonathan Green. He writes a series called Pax Britannia. It's a steampunk series, so basically you have the 1990s, Queen Victoria is still alive at 160, there are dinosaurs in London Zoo, and it's sufficiently bonkers. Also, the main character is partly based on Sherlock Holmes, and the third book in the series is actually a straight-up Holmes pastiche. So go to abaddonbooks.com to have a look at that, if you are so inclined. I just started reading the series, and I think it's quite funny and good. And the third thing, there was a girl at the expo who had this brilliant stall with a sign that said, tell us about Rupert Graves and get a free sticker. And I'd really, really like to credit her on this podcast because I think that was amazing. So if you are her or if you know who she is, please do let me know because I really, really want to find out who you are. But I have no idea. I'm so unorganized. Thank you very, very much. Bye.
A reminder that you can help save Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's home in Hindhead, Surrey by supporting the Undershaw Preservation Trust. It was at Undershaw that he wrote The Hound of the Baskervilles and The Return of Sherlock Holmes and entertained many notable people, including Bram Stoker, the author of Dracula, J.M. Barrie, the creator of Peter Pan, and the young Virginia Woolf. Today, Undershaw stands sorrowfully empty, neglected, and vandalized. Waverly Borough Council have granted the owners planning permission to carve up the literary historic house into three flats with five more homes built on its side. Modern townhouses, or maintained as the single dwelling that Conan Doyle designed and had built. The Undershaw Preservation Trust is vigorously working towards the latter. And you can help by visiting www.saveundershaw.com, as well as following them on Twitter and joining their Facebook campaign. Thank you.
If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you two one your mind?
Of deduction, oh science. Of deduction, oh science. Of deduction. Tell me, oh, tell me, oh, tell me what I did today. Tell me, oh, tell me, oh, tell me why I feel this way. Beat of obsession, so long and so unreal. Can you look at a heart and tell me you don't feel? But I see through your lies, your clever disguise. Oh, Sherlock, I know that you needed me tonight. Oh, science of deduction. Oh, science of deduction. Oh, science of deduction. Tell me, oh, tell me, oh, tell me why I feel this way. Tell me, oh, tell me, oh, tell me what I did today. Taught me how to run a so-called leap of faith. Was the best it I never had. Danger running through my veins. Your smile's a rarity, not the man that I used to be. A ray of clarity and sunshine. Oh, science of deduction. Oh, science of deduction. Oh, science deduction. Tell me, oh, tell me, oh, tell me what I did today.